Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-Pack. Save $200 when you put in code word HOWIE3. Sale is just for this week only and while supplies last. Order at EdenPure.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith. The last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I'm very excited about my next guest because this is an issue that you might have noticed doesn't get as much attention anymore from, I don't know, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cher. No one seems to care about what's happening at the border. But at the Center for Immigration Studies, they do care, and they're reporting on it all the time. With me now is the Director of Policy Studies, Jessica Vaughn. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the Grace Curley Show.
My pleasure, Grace. Good to talk with you.
You as well. So there's a lot of stories I want to get to, but I think the first one, Jessica, that kind of took my breath away, because there's been talk about this vaccine hesitancy and the way it's being shaped by the left, is that everyone who's scared to get the vaccine is a redneck, Trump-supporting, gun-toting, credulous boomer rube. And that's not the case. There's a study now that was on Fox News. 30% of immigrants in ICE custody refused COVID-19 vaccine. Now, does this surprise you, Jessica, this number?
Actually, no, it does not. Having watched what has happened with respect to ICE detention over this whole pandemic, I'm not surprised at all. I can think of a few reasons why people in ICE detention might not want it. One is that if they get COVID, they're betting that they'll be let out, or that, you know, that it'll spread throughout the population and that a sympathetic judge will step in and order them all released, you know, never to be seen again, off into the wind. That has been what has happened, especially here in Massachusetts, in Bristol County, where Sheriff Hodgson had a lot of ICE detainees. And there was a federal judge who was pulling up cases every single day and ordering releases. And then to his great shock, he found that many of them, of these criminal aliens, did not abide by the terms of their release and never showed up again. And, you know, and there, you know, I mean, it's just another way of not complying when you're incarcerated.
And I think for a lot of people right now, why this is so important is that we are being told every single day by the Biden administration that we need to get vaccinated. And I support people getting vaccinated. But they're talking about now going door to door. And they're also talking about, you know, going back to the mask mandates. And I think what a lot of regular Americans have trouble kind of reconciling is this aggressive push for Americans to get it. And then at the same time, very little talk about what the Biden administration is going to do to stop this flow of illegal immigrants. They seem to be pretty silent on it, Jessica.
Well, the Biden administration is simply not interested in stopping the flow of illegal migrants right now. They are only trying to manage it in a way that they think people will not notice what is happening. Meanwhile, in June, we have record numbers of apprehensions by Customs and Border Protection at the southwest border, and probably more than 1,000 people every single day being released who came over illegally. And they're not getting vaccinated. No one is asking them for their recent COVID test or whether or not they were wearing masks while being rafted across the river, or whether they will go get vaccinated once they get here. I mean, it's just completely different rules apply. And it also is no coincidence that some of the communities along the border in Texas and Arizona are COVID hotspots, because people are coming literally from all over the world now and just showing up on our doorstep. And the Biden administration's response is, come on in, no questions asked.
I'm speaking with Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies, and there was another interesting aspect of this that I really couldn't believe. Well, there's two things. One is that the Trump administration implemented Title 42 public health protections, which seems like the most obvious, reasonable thing to do. We have a pandemic going on. You know, we can turn people away based off that alone. I mean, we don't want more COVID. In this article, it says the Biden administration is considering ending Title 42 for migrant families. And then I'm looking at a Breitbart story that you tweeted out, Jessica, and it says returning deported migrants need federal aid for housing. And so now Biden is inviting people back in who aren't even here. It seems like they're going out of their way to make this situation so much worse.
Well, that is the result. I mean, what they're going out of their way to undo anything that Trump did. And, you know, even to the point where, you know, they're operating under this delusion that, you know, everyone who was deported under Trump was deported wrongfully is the word they use, not unlawfully, because that's what, you know, that's what our law says. that's what the federal government's supposed to do, is deport people who were found here illegally. But yeah, they're bringing people back. First, people who were subject to the migration protection protocols, which is the Remain in Mexico policy, told that they had to wait in line in Mexico if they wanted to have an asylum hearing. And, you know, like, two-thirds of the people that were told that went back to their home country because they didn't spend all that money to wait in Mexico. They wanted to go wait in Chelsea or in New Bedford. But they have been brought back, and of course they're destitute because they spent all their life savings on paying a smuggler, and then they had to wait in Mexico in camps. Some of them actually did get jobs in Mexico. They come over here and they have nothing. And so, you know, now state and local governments and publicly funded NGOs are feeling compelled now to pick up the tab to actually house and feed and offer them a job and clothes and, you know, give them their jabs and everything else that, you know, because Trump deported them. Somehow that's, I guess, a new category of refugee for something. That's what happens. And what I heard, provider social service agencies and providers will tell you is that the Biden administration is releasing all these families and kids into the country at 1,000 of them a day, and they wash their hands of them, literally provide almost no services other than the initial housing and shelter. And then they let them go into the communities wherever they want to go around the country. And it's about 6 to 12 months later, all of a sudden, all of these people are on the rolls of the social service agencies in local communities that are now cash strapped. Well, they already have been during the pandemic, helping Americans who were displaced by the shutdowns. And now all of these families are here and have no one to turn to. So the taxpayer, once again, is going to be footing the bill for all of these services that they get. Meanwhile, state foster care systems are strapped. Welfare rolls are strapped already. There's all of this still. We're not quite recovered yet in the economy. But this is a high priority burden that American taxpayers are now expected to bear to the tune of billions of dollars a year.
Yeah, when we see these numbers of migrants entering, especially in Texas, we get a certain number. We obviously know the Biden administration is probably, any sort of estimate they're making is probably lowballing it to begin with. But then you find out about the gotaways, and the gotaways are people who evade Border Patrol and they seem to just disappear. And it says it shows nearly 21,904 migrants who evaded capture from January through April. That's up from 8,561 gotaways. And so, Jessica, they're saying it's 156% increase. And so what happens with these people? They just enter the country and we never hear from them again?
That's right. And these are the cases, these gotaways. These are the people that are, this is what keeps Border Patrol agents and law enforcement officers all over the country up at night. Because what happens is the strategy of the smugglers is they'll send over the kids and the families and the Border Patrol has to go deal with them. And at any point that takes, you know, like 40 to 50% of the Border Patrol agents who are working at any given time, takes them off the line because they have to go process them. And so that's when the smugglers move these loads of drugs, other contraband, and all of the illegal aliens who don't want to get caught, who are not going to, you know, claim asylum. These are people who have criminal records, often very serious. They're gang members. They're people who've been deported before. And they're showing up in larger numbers than ever before. And we know how many of them there are. It's actually was more than 60,000 in May and June alone, because along the border, both in Arizona and Texas, they have surveillance of the border. They have sensors. They have cameras. They can read the tracks that are left in the dirt along the border, very dusty, dry areas. I was actually just down there a few weeks ago hearing about this from Border Patrol agents. These people want to disappear into the country, and they pop up later, usually, you know, when they get arrested for something else. I find it really outrageous that the number of fentanyl overdoses has gone up 30% in recent months, at the same time that border security has been eliminated by the Biden administration. That's because that's what is happening in this flow of gotaways, is the criminals and the drugs are coming in, and they're not staying in the border area. They're coming to towns all over the country, and this is extremely concerning. And again, the Biden administration has taken, I can't think of one thing the Biden administration has done to stop or even slow this influx of illegal migration. It's just nothing at all have they done. They, like I said, they want to manage it. They're okay with it. And it's causing major, major problems in communities, some of which we have yet to experience.
Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies, I have one more question for you. Can you give my listeners a little bit of a summary of what's happening with Governor Greg Abbott's Operation Lone Star? I find this very interesting, and I know it's not a perfect solution by any means, but at least it's something in the right direction, it seems.
Oh, I'll say, I think it's very important. It was very creative and well thought out, and I think it's going to have an effect. The first thing Governor did was declare a state of emergency. That enables the state to accept help in the form of law enforcement officers detailed from other states. It also allows them to increase the penalties for certain types of crimes that people commit. And so what they're doing now, and they they've surged a lot of law enforcement resources there with the help of a few other states, and they are arresting illegal aliens that the Border Patrol misses. A lot of them are going to be these gotaways, and they're charging them with criminal trespass, with criminal mischief, with child endangerment, and any other state or local law that they break, and they've cleared out detention space near the border. So they're locking people up who've crossed the border illegally on state charges. They're going to have a criminal record, and most of them will get time served, and then ICE will be expected to remove them, because any recent arrivals are supposed to be a priority for the Biden administration. So they're doing the job the federal government won't do, and that is simply arrest people, impose consequences, and send them home. And I think that this is going to have an effect on the number of people coming. There's going to be people arrested who are like, oh, the smuggler didn't tell me I was going to jail in Dilley, Texas. You know, that's not what they had in mind. But I think this is really important and creative, and we all should watch. Now, they're going to get lawyered up in a hurry. I'm sure that the ACLU and the Mexican, you know, or some of these illegal alien advocacy groups are going to try to challenge this in court. But it's going to be very interesting to watch. And I think just the messaging of it alone, you know, in contrast to, you know, Congress, the Democrats in Congress trying to push through a massive amnesty bill, which a lot of these people are coming hoping to take part in, I think this could potentially change the dynamics.
Jessica Vaughn, thank you so much. Director of Policy Studies for the Center for Immigration Studies. You can follow Jessica on Twitter, JessicaV_CIS. And Jessica, what's the website if people want to read your latest stuff?
We are at CIS.org with reporting from the border and from the interior.
Thank you so much. Very informative. I love having Jessica on. It's all very important. We need to keep up to date on it. We will be back with more of your calls, 844-500-4242. A lot more to get to. Governor Gavin Newsom in the news. We'll talk about that on the other side. This is The Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Jen Psaki, not having a great week. She's going back with Peter Ducey back and forth a lot. And her responses get more and more flippant and more smug with Peter. And you get the sense that this is how, when she's talking to Peter Ducey, she's talking to that basket of deplorables. That's how she would talk to you when she comes knocking on your door to ask about the vaccine and what's your status. This is how she would talk to you, with the smug, you know, condescending, sarcastic responses. And I think Peter Ducey's getting fed up. I do want to play what ended up happening as far as they put in this citation for a very, very controversial group, the Abolitionist Teachers Union, or the Abolitionist Teachers something. And it was put in and it was a mistake. They tweeted it out, or, you know, they included it. And Peter Ducey asked them about this, and let's play it.
Now that the Education Department admits they made a mistake in their guide for reopening by...
How so?
They included advice from the Abolitionist Teaching Network, and they came out and said that was not supposed to be in there. Is the administration going to follow up with school districts to make sure that the Abolitionist Teaching Network material is not in lesson plans?
Well, just to be clear, for the context, because I know you love context of what you're asking about here, what you're referring to is a citation in a report, of which there were 1,000 citations. So I'm quite impressed with your researchers for finding one of 1,000 citations.
Can we stop it there? Does she have to be such a jerk all the time?
Yes.
It's really like Mean Girl-esque. He's just asking you questions. I know it's tough having one reporter out of like 30 who ask you one decent question once in a while, Jen. But you could maybe tone down the absolute disgust you have for him. I mean, Jen, you can't even pronounce thing. How about just, oh no, it was a mistake and we don't, you know, once in a while you can be a little bit sincere. If you actually made a mistake, if you made an error, which by the way, it's about your third or fourth error of the month. Recognizing Taiwan, that was a big whoopsie. You had to backtrack on that. Who's ever controlling the social media or sending these things out doesn't seem to do a lot of double checking. I'm wondering if Joe Biden actually is in control. He's just sending all this out. Whoops. But it's just this downplaying and this gaslighting. It really gets under my skin. Once in a blue moon, if you make a mistake, can't you just be honest and say, yeah, that was a mistake, Peter. You know, it really was. I don't like all this cutesiness. And just for context, because I know you love context. You work for us, Jen. You don't have to treat Peter Ducey, as much as you despise him, which is clear, is the only person in that room who's voicing the opinion of millions of Americans. And you could treat him with a little bit more respect. Just, you know, common courtesy. 844-500-4242. When we get back, we're talking Hunter Biden, Nancy Pelosi, and Gavin Newsom. California better get ready. He's about to make things a whole lot worse. It's The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. All right, we are going to get into Governor Gavin Newsom, because his latest comments, I mean, he's a man facing recall and he's petrified and he's digging and digging and digging. And I think it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I know we have Charlie Parker/Baker here and we spend a lot of time talking about him. But whenever I get to talk about Governor Hair Gel, I'm delighted because I've never seen somebody fail so spectacularly on a daily basis. This guy is such a phony. And what's interesting is I actually went out to California during COVID. I didn't tell anyone at the time because I didn't want everyone to freak out. But when I was there, I was in a coffee shop and a kid came in with a t-shirt of Governor Gavin Newsom with a big clown nose. And I said, oh, that's a great t-shirt. And you knew this kid wasn't like a MAGA supporter. It's California. They're all hipsters getting their lattes with their oat milk. I said, I like that t-shirt. He said, oh, yeah, yeah, we're selling them, you know, comedy club down the street. We're selling them for, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I thought, wow, this hatred for Governor Gavin Newsom is definitely not a political, a one-sided political situation. This is both sides in California saying this guy needs to go. And we are going to get into that. But there's another interesting story here, and it's about Nancy Pelosi. So Nancy Pelosi had a busy week. She did not allow Congressman Jim Banks and Jim Jordan onto her very special blue ribbon, top secret, important, biggest thing since the Civil War commission. But she's going forward with the commission. It's just going to be mostly Democrats and maybe Lynn, Liz, whatever, Cheney. I don't know what Pelosi's deciding to call her this week, but she'll let us know soon. So she had that going for her. And then she also announced yesterday that she would not go through, she would not sign anything or not support anything unless the Democrats, as far as these bills go, these trillion-dollar bills, unless they get everything they want. So again, she stepped on Biden's toes. She's not willing to compromise. I remember a time when Trump was president and Pelosi was actually kind of, I don't want to say sane because that is being far too generous and I know I'll get heat for it, but she was less into this hyper partisan theater. She really was. Like everyone the first time around was like, are you going to impeach Trump? Are you going to impeach Trump? And she kept saying, it's not good for the country. You know, it's not a good idea. And you kind of got the sense that she knew politically from being around for 80 something years that impeachment doesn't always play well for the party that's pushing for it. She also had that interview at one point where she talked about the squad being just a couple people. You know, she's had some moments where I thought she's trying to rein this back. And then she just let the floodgates go. I don't know what happened. I don't know what switch flipped, but she is holding on to that. I'm blanking on what is that thing called? The thing she holds?
Gavel.
Gavel, thank you. She's holding on to that gavel for dear life. And she's trying to prove to these radical progressives that she is more woke and more committed to the anti-Trump cause. And it's not going well. So she does that this week. She steps on Biden's toes. And then she comes out and she is talking about the Hyde Amendment. Now, I'm going to read this to you. All right. This is from Just the News, John Solomon's news network. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the Democrats' effort to repeal the longstanding Hyde Amendment to allow taxpayer funding of abortion is the right thing to do. Again, this is devout Catholic Nancy Pelosi who prays for President Trump. I pray for him before Ben. I pray for the president. That's how he always says it's P-R-E-Y. It's not P-R-A-Y. But she always talks about how she's such a devout Catholic, you know, and she was growing up. At one point, someone asked her why she hated the president, and she was aghast that the reporter would assume she hated the president because she's a Catholic. She doesn't hate anyone. I just want to reemphasize that. She is a devout Catholic, just like our president, Joe Biden. So the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has called on legislators to maintain the Hyde Amendment in the bill before its passage out of the committee. If the final bill is approved by the Democrats' slim majorities in both the House and the Senate, it will be the first time since 1976 that the Hyde Amendment is excluded from the federal budget. Now, this is a big deal to a lot of Catholics. Mississippi Republican Senator Roger Wicker and West Virginia Democrat Senator Joe Manchin are calling on the Senate Appropriations Committee to include the Hyde Amendment in the appropriations bill that's due for a vote in the coming weeks. When Pelosi was asked why she thinks the Hyde Amendment should be overturned, and I want, if there's anyone out there, if there's any Democrats who consider themselves devout Catholics, and thought Nancy Pelosi was going to have their back, or thought Joe Biden was going to have their back, and voted and said, you know what? Joe Biden goes to church every Sunday. Nancy Pelosi, she's a mother. She's a grandmother. She prays for the president. I want you to take a listen to Nancy Pelosi's response to this. This is cut 12, please, Jared.
It is something that has been a priority for many of us a long time. As a devout Catholic and mother of five in 6 years, I feel that God blessed my husband and me with our beautiful family, five children, 6 years almost to the day. But that may not be what we should. It's not up to me to dictate that that's what other people should do. And it's an issue of fairness and justice for poor women in our country.
For all the devout Catholic Dems who are counting on Pelosi, don't worry. You still have Joe Manchin. He's not always reliable, but who knows? Maybe he'll come through. Tom, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, hi, Grace. I'm wondering why nobody is discussing President Biden's motivation for opening the borders. The last speaker you had on, the woman, and I had to lower the radio so I couldn't listen to everything, but she did say people who go on and get located someplace apply for help with the local social service agency.
Right.
I'm saying that information for that person who come over the border, that information is then provided to somebody in that state who now registers them to vote. And they, whether they vote or not, they are going to vote Democrat. I can't think of why Biden's doing this. Nobody's speaking about it. They're speaking about vaccines and things like that.
Tom, I think that most people know what the end game is. I mean, the end game is to get more votes in any way possible. We know that any sort of identification is considered Jim Crow, Jim Eagle, Jim Crow 2.0. We know that they want to make mail-in ballots, you know, very accessible. They want to make anyone be able to drop off tons of ballots from wherever. There's no question that this pouring in of illegal aliens, that most people do think that this is the end game, is to get more votes. They want to win elections. And that's something that we know about the Democrats. So I appreciate you bringing it up because it is very important. But I think what's more important is that we figure out a way to stop this so that that doesn't happen. But I do understand your frustration, because I think it's important to look at the long game. And that does seem to be their end game here, is to win elections, which the ends justify the means if you're a Democrat. There's a lot of noble lies they will tell to accomplish their goals. All right, so I do want to talk, and I appreciate the call, sir. I do want to talk a little bit here about Gavin Newsom, because I think that this guy is, just when you think like, oh, he can't do anything else to ruin California. I mean, California is, you talk to people who went to California 30 years ago, like my parents always talk about how it was the most beautiful place to go. You know, you go to San Francisco and it was the tops. That's where everyone wanted to go for their honeymoon. That's where everyone wanted to visit with their friends. California is very different now. But Governor Gavin Newsom has a tendency to not accept any sort of blame. The only time he accepted blame was when he was forced to, after he dined at the French Laundry with a bunch of health officials and friends, and, you know, it was someone's birthday or something. I don't even know who was there, but he dined with a bunch of people inside a very fancy restaurant. He must have been forced by his PR people to apologize. But besides that, he plays the blame game. And a perfect example was when this recall really started heating up, he actually thought, all right, I'll use January 6th as a way to get out of this. So he blamed the people who were initiating this recall. People like Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from Red State, young people, Democrats, everyone in California. There's so many different people from so many different walks of life who do not like Gavin Newsom. He's like Bill de Blasio in that sense. He brings people together. He blamed it on QAnon. He thought, all right, I'll use this Capitol riot thing. I'll try to weave this in and make it work for me. And people were outraged. Like, wait a second. We're going the Democratic route here. We're doing everything by the books. We're getting signatures because we don't like you and we don't like what you're doing in California. And you're going to accuse us of being conspiracy theorist nut jobs on the internet? It's very insulting. Well, now he's playing the blame game again. He was asked about the crime rates in California, which are skyrocketing. There's so much crime. Crime and homelessness. And this is what he said about crime. Cut 13.
The last three decades, we've actually seen a significant decline in crime in the state. You're seeing crime increase in red states that had no criminal justice reform, commensurate with the crime rates that we're seeing here in California, particularly as it relates to gun-related crime. So I think that's an easy scapegoat for folks.
Crime's actually going down, and he tries to throw it on red states. This reminds me of when Charlie Baker would be asked questions about the shutdowns and how they're killing businesses. And he'd be like, well, we don't want to be like those red states. I mean, everything's crazy over there. And you're kind of like, is it though? What news are you watching? CNN? Are you watching Brian Stelter every night? And then he did something even crazier at a press conference. Now, listen to this. This is from the Washington Examiner. Gavin Newsom invites world's homeless to California. This is against the backdrop that Newsom held a press conference Monday pledging $12 billion to combat homelessness on top of billions that have already been spent. People will be taken care of, and anyone who wants to avail themselves to the California dream is welcome, he said in response to a reporter who asked whether he expected the nation's homeless to descend upon California with this new idea. Now, when I read that headline, Gavin Newsom invites world's homeless to California, I immediately thought, homeless people tell Gavin Newsom, don't worry, we're already here. I mean, they have the homeless under control. I mean, that's they have plenty. I don't think if you asked a California resident, what's something we need? They might say lower taxes. They might say more policing. I don't think they'd say we need more homeless people. I think they'd say we're set on that for now. California is the highest tax state in the nation, and buying a home is out of reach for the average resident. Los Angeles County Sheriff, this is the part I really liked, Alex Villanueva, he said he was not pleased with what he heard. He said, as a private citizen, I support the Newsom recall. Villanueva has tried to stand in the gap of rising crime and increased homelessness despite a $145 million defund the police cut to his budget. And this is what he said to the Washington Examiner. Those comments blew us away. We are trying to keep our heads above water, and he goes and says that? When he invites the rest of the nation's homeless to California, that is a death wish. And he actually did. Let's play this. Cut 14.
How do you keep California from becoming a magnet for people who have issues in other states and coming here to take advantage of what California is spending? It's been a problem in the past.
People want to come here for new beginnings at all income levels. That's part of the California dream. And we have a responsibility to accommodate and enliven and inspire. And California's dream is still alive and well. $80 billion budget surplus. You've seen the jobs numbers last 5 months. We've averaged over 100,000 jobs every month. Highest job numbers in America. This state is roaring back. And I'm proud of people from around the world looking to California again for opportunity. And again, that should not just be for certain people. All people, I think, should aspire to that California dream, regardless of their income level and regardless of their lot in life.
I just have to say, wherever you are, if you're not in California and you think you have a bad governor, maybe if you're in Michigan, you're right. Maybe if you're in New York, yeah, you're onto something. But otherwise, I don't think you can compare to that guy.
I love that the reporter who asked the question, you audibly heard him sigh during the answer.
Why? And you know what? It's the same thing, Jared, that Biden and Obama, that these guys always do, these Democrat politicians, they try to convince people, don't believe your eyes. Don't believe that poop that you're stepping over on the side of the street. Believe me, it's beautiful. Believe me, it's successful. Believe me, there's no crime. Meanwhile, people are, you know, scared to death. There's poop everywhere. There's needles everywhere. But Gavin Newsom is telling you, don't be distracted by that. Look here. Look at my shiny white teeth and my nice hair. Everything's great. It's insane. We will be back. We have to do the poll question. We have more sound to get to. I'll take your calls, 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley. She's working for you.
I'm like Bette Midler and For the Boys. I've got to keep the troops entertained.
Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
What's your favorite Joe Biden assurance? Honestly, I'm serious. Not a joke. That's not hyperbole. I mean it. I'm being deadly earnest, or I'm not being facetious.
I'm being deadly earnest, because I hadn't heard it till Wednesday night, and I love it.
I'm being deadly earnest is polling at 9%. 43% say, not a joke.
No, guys, you gotta reconsider deadly earnest. It's a weird combo of words. It's like Clint Eastwood at a nursing home. I'm being deadly earnest. All right, so we're talking about California. The Golden State is already cracking under the weight of the nation's largest homeless population, according to the Washington Examiner. But Governor Gavin Newsom is welcoming the homeless with open arms. Dan, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, Grace, how's it going?
I'm good. What's going on?
I love the show. You guys are killing it. I am further convinced that I'm slipping into some sort of bizarre parallel dimension. I'm not sure how much South Park you watch, but years and years ago, there was a South Park episode where they solved their homeless crisis by luring all of the homeless to California behind a giant bus blasting a parody song of California Love. And the fact that's sort of where we're ending up in our current reality sort of blows my mind. I mean, they could take all the homeless if they want to get them out of Maine.
Yeah, I mean, no, exactly. I'm like, you know what? Cool. You know what? If you want to do that, then do that. But I feel bad for people who live there. Dan, I'm glad you brought that up because Jared is a South Park expert. California is nice to the homeless. California, super cool to the homeless. In the city of Santa Monica. Lots of rich people giving change to the homeless. Change. I have to say, to Dan's point, like, that was a parody, but now they wouldn't even have to do that on South Park because Governor Gavin Newsom is doing it himself. He's the one driving the bus.
No, when I lived out there, they actively subsidized the city of Santa Monica would subsidize the homeless problem. And now it's getting worse because they extended the expo line from downtown to the beach. So Skid Row, all the people in downtown, just made their way out to the beach.
South Park Hallie dreams Dove. Come to life. We will be back with Crazy Karen and some snitch line complaints. Don't go anywhere.